It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Aha. And if you caught that slight hesitation, it's not because he's unsure of himself. It is just that he is a little ways away today and doing the call-in for the hour. And he's somewhere pretty much fun from what I've seen in the pictures. He's doing a little fishing and stuff like that.
That is certainly true.
Mm-hmm. The latest one was you call them a dolphin or a mahi, and that's one of my favorite foods on earth. Has it been consumed yet?
Some of it, not all of it.
Okay, good. I wish you could send us some, but that probably wouldn't make it all that good. Anyway, I digress, as I do so often. A couple of shout-outs. First off, happy 250th birthday to the U.S. Army. Happy 79th birthday to their commander-in-chief, and happy 248th birthday to the U.S. flag. And that's a lot of birthdays for one day. It's going to be quite a production tonight, it appears, in Washington, D.C. And, of course, everybody has some concerns if the lunatics are going to try to disrupt things, because they usually do. But other than that, we're just going to have a good time and watch a very much fun and patriotic display like we haven't seen in quite some time. So I hope everybody tunes in for it. As to the market, I think I'll open up with a quote from a famous philosopher and then let Adam take it over. In the words of Rosanna Dana, it's always something. If it isn't one thing, it's another. Take it from there.
Yeah. It's just one of those situations whenever things are going a little too well, something throws a wrench in the works. It's true in life, it's true in work, and it's certainly true in the market as well. And that's exactly what we saw this week. The news came out on Thursday night that Israel had launched a strategic offensive against Iran to dismantle their nuclear capabilities. I pretty much believe that was inevitable. It had to happen. Iran had been lying to America and the world for years about not developing nukes while taking our money to not do it, and it was just a matter of time before basically Israel was our proxy and decided that that couldn't happen, and they have the proximity to the problem and the capability of taking it out, and so they did. The market always reacts negatively to these things, but and the price of oil, of course, went spiked a bit. But I think it's a good thing for world peace and things like that. I'm pretty sure that most Iranian people don't want their current leaders to have nukes, and I'm also pretty sure that some of their allies don't want them to have nukes. It would not be a good thing. So this will pass. That's my take on it. Prior to the strikes in Iran, the market was reacting positively to the news that the U.S. and Chinese officials met in London, and they walked away with a framework of a trade deal. So that was really good news. It wasn't the full-scale plan down to every details, but both sides seemed pretty pleased with the progress, and so it really seemed like a step forward. That came on top of CPI and PPI inflation reports coming in weaker than expected, and that sort of put a damper on any talk of rampant inflation or stagflation. And so things were trending along pretty nicely this week until that happened. On Friday morning, the market sold off about 1%, and then the oil prices surged, as I mentioned. By the end of the day, oil was up 7.6%, and the market was down about 1.1%. This caused what had been a positive week to turn negative, with the S&P down just 0.4%, NASDAQ off 0.6%, and the Dow off 1.3% for the week. For the year, the S&P is up 1.6%, the NASDAQ 0.5%, and the Dow is down 0.8%. None of the indexes has reached their all-time high level yet. Some of those were set this year, some set late last year. CPI data, lower than expected, as I mentioned. It came in at 0.1 versus 0.2% expected. Core CPI also grew at 0.1%. Both overall core and super core CPI continue to trend lower in 2025, regardless of tariffs. The average tariff rate during that time has increased from 2.5% to 7% in April. The New York Fed released their monthly consumer expectations survey this month, and despite forecasts of inflation expectations continuing to climb, the forecast was that the expectations would go up. They actually dropped by one of the largest amounts on record. The prior month was 3.64%, while the actual reading came in at 3.2%. The three-year expectation also fell to 3%, which, if you go back to my business school days, that was the long-term inflation expectation. This also cast doubt on the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Survey, which I've been talking about a lot. It's another national survey similar to the New York Fed, but it shows Americans expect inflation to run 6.6% for next year. There's a disconnect there, obviously. 3.2 versus 6.6. Do you think that the University of Michigan is oversampling Democrats? Maybe they took
never
their polling
do that.
Message from the presidential polls.
Yeah, they've never stooped that low, would they, Adam?
What's that?
They would never stoop that low, would they, to oversample?
I don't think it's a purpose, something that they would do on purpose. But as we know from the presidential polling, it's a very common mistake these days that a lot of pollsters make. And I don't think that there's anything to gain by showing wrong data in this poll. So I'm just wondering if that's what's happening.
Yeah, it could be. There's a lot of negativity out there. The Trump derangement syndrome impacts people in ways that are just nonsensical in my book.
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats in that poll, it's actually much higher than 6.6. It's closer to 8% is what they expect inflation to run over the next year. So it's just interesting that that's such a disconnect between the New York Fed and the University of Michigan when they claim to be sampling the same pool of people. So we mentioned initial jobless claims just barely stayed under that important 250,000 last week while heading in the wrong direction, meaning up. This week continued that trend. Last week we saw 247,000. This week it was 248,000. So we're just inching towards that 250,000. However, there's kind of an asterisk here. Despite the claim that these numbers are seasonally adjusted, the last few years have shown a similar trend at this time of year. So we saw a gradual increase towards the 250,000 mark last summer as well. And then it kind of trended down after August. So maybe they need to do some adjusting on the seasonality figures on that report. Maybe not. I don't know. It's just interesting that the last few years have shown the same trend at this same time of year. Continuing claims are also moving higher, although they're still at pretty historically low levels. So that's not really too concerning at this point. If we get to 255, 260, but then it starts to turn around after the summer, I wouldn't be that worried about it. There aren't a lot of alarm bells that are screaming recession right now, as far as I can see.
All right, Adam, we got 5 seconds. We've got to take a break and pay some bills, and we'll pick up on this right afterwards. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I did sort of forget to welcome everybody, all the regulars who've been around for these 10 and a half years, going strong. Welcome back, and we can't do it without you, or at least we wouldn't do without you, because it would be useless. So welcome back. Now, for anybody who's new, whether you found out about it through us or through a friend or just happened to have your radio set, try to stick around for the whole hour, and we will have a trivia question, as usual, in a moment, and whatever we want to talk about, we'll talk about, unless you want to change the subject, which is as easy as picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255. All right. As usual, as I said, trivia question brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can get a hold of Paul at 904-636-7888. I'm going to talk about all that wonderful financial advice that's out there on the internet. You are probably inundated with parts of it, whether you're a TikToker or just commercials, or you watch TV, you listen to the radio. It's all over the place, and it's free and very often that means it's worth what you pay for it. And sometimes it's not even worth that. So the question today, what percentage of Americans say that they have made regrettable financial decisions due to misleading online information? Answers a whole number between 1 and 100%. So what percentage of Americans have regretted doing something because they heard it on the internet? And it's not one or two. So I just narrowed the range for you all. All right, Adam, back to the market. What do we expect now?
I expect that it really depends on what happens over in the Middle East. If it just turns into a prolonged fight that escalates and who knows? I mean, that could spell trouble for the market. But if this is just simply Israel going in and dismantling the nuclear capabilities of Iran, then I would expect the market will probably shrug it off and move on.
Well, in theory, it would be a good thing.
For the overall world, yes.
Yeah. The threat elimination would make a lot of people feel a lot better.
Doubt about it.
Adam and I use a service that they're data collectors and presenters and so on. And you'll see these people around the Wall Street shows and such. They're absolutely wonderful. They call themselves Bespoke Investments. They wrote something this week. I don't normally quote people like that or just use it for reference, but they wrote something that really caught my eye. They said today, while things could get worse, they usually don't. Isn't that
true?
Good? You know, that's like Ben Stein's dad. He said, anything that's unsustainable will stop. I love things that are so succinct that you know intuitively they're right. And you can remember them, and it applies to so many situations. Usually, things don't get worse. So we'll see. I'm not saying that Monday will bring us a bed of roses either, but I'm not, and I'm sure Adam feels the same way, I'm not one of those people who looks at that situation and says, oh, here we go. You know, I have said for many, many years on the radio, I said, what we've look at, if you're thinking about what could happen and what you should do about it, I said, when I look at something that would be very troublesome, it would be having a mushroom cloud over Tel Aviv. Well, there isn't one. Yeah, there's some bomb strikes and such, but there's no mushroom cloud. And I don't think Bibi has any intention of ever seeing one. So as long as we're good with that, I think we're good. Makes sense?
Yeah, I tend to agree.
All right. You want to talk about anything else in the market, or shall we move along?
No, let's move along. That was my whole wrap, wrapped it up with 5 seconds to go.
Way to go. Love it. How about, I got to come up with the right name here. Do you know what a MAGA account is, Adam?
That's in the new bill.
Yeah. It's called Money Accounts for Growth and Advancement, or MAGA. Well, that is in the new budget bill that the House has already passed. But there was a change made in it during the negotiations, and they're now calling it the Trump accounts. And there's hardly any difference. But if there's one thing that will irritate the other side more than calling something a MAGA account, I'm absolutely certain that calling it a Trump account will be it. But let's talk about it for a minute, because I got a take on it that probably nobody else will have. A Trump account says that every baby born between January 1 of this year and December 31st of 27, I believe, 4 years total, so 5, 6, 7, 8, then the end of 28. Every child born would have an account established for that child with a starter of $1,000. That left to sit, it would be invested in an index like the SPY, S&P 500 index, and it would accumulate dividends, and it can't be touched until that child is 18, at which point they could get part of it. There's a couple other points. It wouldn't truly belong to them until they're 30 years old. At that time, in the mornings or in the early days, the parents can also contribute money to that account. But I got a couple of major problems with these things. And the first one is probably the most basic of all. It's the moral dilemma. If you remember last week or 2 weeks ago, I was talking about the proposal to have young people and people who otherwise worked for companies that didn't have a current 401k, this bill would allow those people to participate in a 401k. And there was nothing wrong with that in my book, except one thing. They're talking about matching funds and who would supply the matching funds. Me and you and everybody listening and everybody not listening. The U.S. taxpayer would match funds for people who don't have a 401k. Well, if you're working for, I don't know, any big company you can think of, Johnson & Johnson, and you got a 401k and they match some funds, that company does that. Not me, not you, that company. Well, I don't want my tax dollars matching funds for a 401k when the kid could just open an IRA. And as we were talking about that, Adam brought up an old bugaboo of ours about they have kept those IRA limits so low over time that the best thing about a 401k is that the contribution limits are so high. Well, we could fix that overnight if we would raise the contribution limits for 401ks. How simple was that? And it didn't cost taxpayers a nickel to do it. Now, it's kind of the same thing with the Roth deal. It's a simple change that they haven't seen fit to make. But I think government has it 100% wrong when it comes to matching people's 401k contributions with my money. I want my money back if they take it. So what happens with the Trump savings accounts? Well, point number one, who funds it? Here we go again. Me, you, everybody listening, everybody not listening. I don't want taxpayers funding. There were 3,622,673 recorded births last year. Take that times $1,000 a piece, and you get $3.6 billion of taxpayer money going to OPC. That's other people's children. Some of them, children of illegals. Some of them, children of people I really detest. Some of them, very nice people, I'm sure. But it's my money. It's not their money. And I do not like the way they spend it in general, for the most part. But I certainly don't like it the way it is now on this proposal. So that's bad. Now, let's take another step further. That money grows tax-free, and if the parents put any money in it, they have to contribute after-tax money, similar to a Roth IRA. Okay, that's all well and good. With a Roth IRA, it grows tax-free, tax-deferred, and then it comes out later as soon as you've satisfied the various precepts of the age and length of time. That's all free. Well, these are never free. When you pull money out of there, it's taxable. So let me get this straight. You put my money in there, that's one thing. You put your parents' post-tax dollars in there and let it grow. But when it comes out, they're going to tax it? I don't think so. That, the word that comes to mind offhand is double taxation. That's our 1 minute music for those of you listening. Adam's having some trouble with that hearing. And anyway, I am once again objecting. If you want to do something nice for your kids where taxes aren't going to be an issue, there is nothing I can think of that will allow you to deduct the money. That's just not done. But you can contribute to an for instance, a 529 college savings plan. That money grows tax-free, and as it gets, as the child gets older and gets up toward the going to college part, if the child doesn't go into higher education, that's okay. And the reason it's okay is because you can assign a new beneficiary to it, and it will, it can even be you. I'll wrap that up right after the break, because we've got to take another one right now quickly. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as we have said, our trivia question remains open, as do the lines. If you want to take a shot at this, it's 904-222-8255. But what percentage of Americans say they've made regrettable financial decisions due to misleading online information? And a loyal listener just texted me a little bit ago and said 100%. I said, not quite. But I love the way people think when they've been listening to us for a long time. That's enough said. What the heck? Anyway, wrapping up this Trump account, I do not understand the mentality of these people when they do things such as taxing the benefits from those accounts. You made something that would possibly get through, which was supposedly to help all the young people grow up with something, and you made it detestable, not just objectionable, but detestable by using, one, by using our money, and two, by taxing the money that comes out that was already taxed. It is just so typical of a Washington, D.C. mentality that assumes that all money is their money and that anything they let you keep is just generosity on their behalf. That's why they call them tax expenditures. We have to get people in there who understand the difference between government money, which is our money, and our money. And I say whatever we give them should be absolutely minimized. But you all know that's how I feel anyway, and you should not be surprised. You know, I really wish there were a way that you could do this without involving the masses and all of our tax money. Because, you know, we can't pay for anything. It is impossible for this government to, quote, pay for anything because they overspend their income by, well, let's be conservative, $1 trillion a year. It's actually well above that. But you cannot pay for things. You can only charge more things until your income and your outflow are exactly the same. And my entire adult life, I've been yelling and screaming about it, and they just don't seem to care. But that's that for now. Anyway, if I get any new information on the Trump accounts, I'll let you know. But this is what I hope the Senate does not go for. Now, you know that the biggest point of controversy in the Senate is the SALT deduction, state and local tax deduction. It started out unlimited, and if they don't pass this particular budget bill, it will go back to unlimited because it would revert back to 2017 rules. So nobody, some people would love it, but a very small percentage of people would love that. And it's, quote, expensive to the government. So under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, implemented in 2018, they limited the SALT deduction to $10,000 per taxpayer. A taxpayer is defined as a person or two people who file a tax return. So if two people get $10,000 deduction and one person gets a $10,000 deduction, I'd say right away, Houston, we have a problem. Why they didn't eliminate the marriage penalty is really no mystery, because under the budget rules, they have to come up with an artificial number that meets certain guidelines. And I say artificial because they're always wrong. Always, always, always. The Congressional Budget Office, that is there to do one thing and one thing only, score the bill, which means tell us how much it's going to cost. And they have to operate under certain stupid parameters that require their answers to be wrong all the time. Why we have that, I do not know, but this is a classic case. So what we do now, we've got the $40,000. Well, if you're from California, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, there's a good likelihood that if you're a significant wage earners, and a lot of those turn into, you know, donors to politicians, that that limit hurt you because you didn't get your full SALT deduction anymore. So in this one, the representatives from places like that who are hearing from their constituents that they're very unhappy about the $10,000 limit, it got through the House with a $40,000 limit. Once again, still a marriage penalty. Once again, no inflationary adjustment, but at least just $40,000. Well, now the people on the other side, Freedom Caucus and so on, they're saying, oh, wait, we're not going down from there. We can't go down. Everybody wants something different. Depends who you represent. So the one that's inching its way through the Senate right now is $30,000. Well, yeah, is there a big difference? According to the representatives from New York, it's a huge difference. I don't know which one's going to get through, but I do know that nothing I have seen, heard, or read says that they're working on the dual problem of the marriage penalty and the cost of living adjustment. So look for another pig to come out. They'll dab a little lipstick on it, and we'll piece it back together. Because if they don't do it, we're going to have the world's biggest tax hike and some other problems. So I look for this to get passed. I do not know if they can make the requested deadline of July 4th or not, because let's face it, they're not the most functional 100 people on earth. Just an update. I told you I'd keep you informed, and I will keep you informed. All right. We've just got so much stuff and so little time. You know that our population problem around the world is causing a lot of problems, because as the baby boomer generation ages and gets onto social benefits and so on, the systems that were set up that depended on an ever-growing population are having some trouble, because there are very few countries that have growing populations. I just got some new numbers for Japan, and they're kind of interesting. To replace a country's population, you have to have a birth rate of about 2.1, plus or minus a little bit, because of the survival rate of births and so on. So if every woman of childbearing age had 2.1 kids, your population would stay pretty much the same. Well, in Japan, this is not happening. According to Japan's health ministry, in 2024, there were only 686,000 babies born. That's down 5.7%, and the first time under 700,000 since records began, ready for this, in 1899. The lowest birth rate since 1899, the lowest birth number and rate. Japan's fertility rate, the average number of babies a woman has in her lifetime, fell last year to 1.15. This is danger zone stuff. If it doesn't change, Japan's population of 124 million is expected to sink to 87 million by 2070. And who's going to be taking care of the older people? I don't know. They got a serious problem. Most countries encourage things like immigration. We always will, legal immigration. Japan is very xenophobic, and they're very proud of their ethnicity. They are not likely to do that. In fact, they discourage it a lot. So, but I look down the road, and I see trouble for older people around the world, because this is happening in Europe and other places. And I don't have an answer for it. I really don't. Things are just too expensive out there, especially in Japan. Raise a kid in Japan, It cost you an arm and two legs. So, do I have answers? No, not in that case. But I certainly have concerns, for what it's worth. All right. Let's see what else we got. Adam already alluded to the rise in consumer sentiment. That was huge. And it comes at a most interesting time that you wouldn't necessarily expect consumer sentiment right now. Now, this number was produced before the incident in Israel and Iran. And I don't know if that will change it or not. And often this kind of lags the stock market changes, and the stock market's been rising. So sentiment has been escalating a bit over the last couple of weeks. But the size of these jumps is astronomical, like world record increases in consumer sentiment. And I hope that stays on, because consumers are, as you all probably know, about 70% of this economy. And as long as consumers feel comfortable enough to go buy things, we're doing fine. But if they start clamming up and holding their money close to their belt, we're maybe in for some trouble. We'll know more soon on all that, because I think over this weekend and next week, there will be quite a lot of changes made in the, shall we say, argument with Israel and Iran. And what that will lead to, I'm not really quite sure. So stay tuned, folks. Could be an interesting week coming up. But I would also say don't panic. And so we've got about 30 seconds. I got anything short here? A New York taxpayer was charged with a $50 million Ponzi scheme fraud among his clients. There are always telltales when you're dealing with a crook, and you need to learn to look for them. More on that in a few minutes. We have to take one more break before the fourth segment, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Yep. I remind everyone, lines are open at 904-222-8255, and we do have a caller who would like to take a shot at it. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
How is everybody?
Excellent, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to do a quick prayer for all the innocent civilians in Iran and Israel that are caught up in what's going on.
Yes, I understand, and I absolutely agree with you.
And I also want to give a shout-out to Mossad. I find Mossad to be one of the most efficient services that I ever heard or saw.
Yeah, the term legendary comes to mind.
There you go. There you go. Anyhow, I have a quick trivia for you guys. Is it okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. What percent of Americans have at least one money bias? And by money bias, they say things such as overconfidence, overestimating one's own abilities when making financial decisions, loss aversion, the tendency to be overly fearful of financial losses, present bias, where they might overpay for goods and services that bring them gratification now, and neglect to put money away for retirement. What percent of Americans would you say have money bias?
Adam, you want to take a shot?
80.
That's a very good guess. It's a little higher. Steve?
81.
They claim, according to this CNBC poll, 98% of Americans.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Anyhow, I will take a shot at the trivia, if I may. And
of course.
I'm going to say 57%.
Yeah, let's see what my notes say. My notes say 57%.
There you go. I got one. Okay.
The man studies a lot. He's good.
Yeah, I do. I read a lot. That's because I live by an old saying that you never know what you had until you lose it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And do you want us to send you something, or are you going to do donation again?
I'll just take whatever. I already read the book, so yeah. I'll just take whatever you have.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Adam's got it, and it'll be taken care of.
Very good. All right. Have a great weekend, and always love the show.
Oh, thanks so much, and you too.
Take.
Yeah, that 57% is pretty awful when you read about it. 39% admit that they have lost $250 or more. And one in five, or 18% actually, have suffered losses over $1,000. And yeah, they've got some ideas why, too. Among those with regrets, they include delaying major financial decisions, that's 33%, acting without professional input, 29%, incurring unnecessary fees, 28%, and sharing inaccurate information with others, 28%, and one in five, 21%, report increased financial anxiety. And I will promise you, that is light. We have seen a lot of it. There's a phenomenon in our business called analysis paralysis. It means you're scared to death to do something. But there's always something going on out there, as I said in the opening part of the show. If it isn't one thing, it's another. That's why our job begins when we take on new clients. It begins with education, because the more you know, the less stupid stuff you will do. And you'll realize that there are times that where it isn't as bad as it seems. And I hope we're in one of those right now. There is absolutely nothing that makes me think that this isn't just another one of those bumps in the road that happen. Now, 3 in 4 Americans, this is the one that bugs me, 74% say they feel confident following their financial advisor's advice without needing further verification. I could go either way on it, I guess, but it seems to me if you're only at 74%, what are the other 26% doing? Maybe they should be shopping around, find somebody new, or maybe it's just me. Never know. Anyway, very good. Congratulations to Mike. You think about that, 57%. And I don't know, again, that's the number that are willing to admit it. It makes you wonder what the real possible number could be out there. All right, Adam, I'm going to ask a question and get your opinion on it. And you know, okay, you know that this happens. There's a school of thought now, and there's some pretty powerful people involved in it, that says spend your IRA money while you're alive and leave your other money to your heirs. Opinion?
Yeah, I think it depends. I think if you're in the lower tax brackets, then that's probably good advice. I think that if you're in the higher tax brackets and you're taking money out in the, you know, the 30-something percent tax bracket, that's maybe not the best strategy for you. It might be better possibly for your kids, but it might not. So I don't know. I think I'm pretty mixed on that one. I don't think there's a broad generalization you can use there that makes one thing more true than the other.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. That's the problem with giving general advice or even stating general opinions. This all stems from the changes in the RMD rules, where no longer can most people extend an inherited IRA out over their lifetime. It's good if you're a spouse, and there's a couple other categories. But if you're a child, for instance, of someone who passes and leaves an IRA to you, you're going to wind up draining that IRA within 10 years. And for some reason, a group of otherwise highly intelligent financial types think that that's the most important thing out there. And I disagree. I think it's possible to be too nice, and I'm with Adam. I think every single year of your life, no matter what your station in life, one of the things you should be looking for is tax minimization. There is no worse expenditure to me than giving more money to Uncle Sam. And I don't see how anybody's kids could ever look at it that way either. So if you inherit an IRA and you've got 10 years worth of time to take it out, fantastic. Lucky you. Never, one of my million old sayings, never plan on an inheritance, because old people do funny things like spending gazillions of dollars before they die on things like health care. It is fine to plan for an inheritance, meaning if you are informed that one will be coming to you, please plan in advance for what you're going to do with it, because otherwise you'll wake up one day and it will probably be gone. And that serves no one, including your deceased parents or whatever. So just something to think about. When I read headlines like that, spend your IRA money, and just shake my head and say, yeah, there's more to this. And anyone who has a cut and dry approach to anything or has an advisor that doesn't really delve into these things, you should be looking for somebody new. And the kinds of things we do are a heck of a lot more than just open your account and invest it and pay you out whatever you want when you need it. There's a lot more to it. And I think I was going to do this today, but I'm going to wait till next week to talk about here's your age, what should you be doing at this particular age in your financial planning from age 20, 30, 40. And it changes a lot because the demands on you change a lot. That's a problem Adam and I face a lot. Adam, I tell you, all kinds of people, I'm sure, that the demands on your money when you're young. Comments, Adam?
What was the question? The demands on your money when you're young?
The multiple demands on your money when you're a young person.
Yeah, we call it getting squeezed. We call it there's this interval of time when you're starting a family and having kids and advancing in your career, but you haven't started making the real big money yet, and you're just getting squeezed from every direction, and you're fighting the battle. What do I pay off? Do I save for retirement? Do I fund current lifestyle? It's just it's a real difficult time in life.
Yeah, and it's at that time you probably feel like you have no money, but it is not a bad time to get involved with a professional financial planner, because sorting these things out can be made a lot easier by talking them over. And that's something that we can't stress often enough, is that younger people need to get involved. And in fact, there's another list. I might tie this in next week too. There are things that you should be talking to your parents about. Somebody once, I can't remember who did the study, but it's something like 80% of kids wish they were more involved in their parents' finances, and about 80% of parents wish that their kids were more involved in their finances. And the problem is that it's a difficult conversation to start. If you're as old as I am, then you remember back in the old days, there were things you didn't talk about, and one of the biggest ones was money. You didn't talk about welfare, you didn't talk about money, and you didn't talk about cancer. Everything else was fine. And that leads to a generation of people who are financially illiterate, which is where we wound up, and now we're backtracking on that thanks to some people like our governor in Florida. So things are looking up a little bit. All right, enjoy the weekend and the parades and all, and we will be right back here next week. Thanks for listening. This